It should be obvious that we cannot solve a crisis with the same methods that got us into it in the first place.
This is a last chance saloon. Because if we don't really take the decisions that are vital now, it's going to be almost impossible to catch up.
We will end the moratorium on extracting our huge reserves of shale, which could get gas flowing as soon as 6 months.
If unprecedented changes are not made and made soon, there will be irreversible damage to the planet.
Zero carbon.
East Hall.
Hello and welcome to Zero Carbonista Series 4 Fool's Gold. I'm Ian Collins and this is the UK's number one environment-based podcast. If it's green, it is in. Dale, it's fair to say that we are pretty rammed to the rafters at this end with quality delights and disturbing stories.
Yeah, shitload of stories, I would say.
Yeah.
Ton of things going on in the world.
Well, I saw this headline, the world likely to breach 1.5 Celsius threshold by 2027. And I thought, well, we've been talking about this for about 2 years now, but here we have something rather more official and disturbing.
Yeah. So this is a new report out this week from a UN agency. It says that sometime in the next 5 years, we'll hit new record temperatures globally and we'll for the first time cross the threshold of having achieved 1.5 degrees temperature rise above pre-industrial levels, which is, of course, the target of the Paris Accord in 2015. And when that was signed, it wasn't thought that the world would reach that level until the 2040s, 2050s, something like that. But this new report says there's a 66% probability that we're going to hit that in the next few years. So like something's accelerating, right? Which is a bit of a thing to worry about, I would say.
Why would it be, bearing in mind all of the different actions that have been put into place, and I know it's woeful, it's nowhere near enough, but it can't be, are we really doing more polluting than we were 20 years ago, if you take our country as an example?
Well, I don't think that's gone up, because I think we're pretty good at kind of measuring and predicting consumption, pollution, that kind of stuff. Mm. I think the modeling of the effects of that on the climate are more difficult to predict. And it turns out that we're coming to the end of an El Nino phase, which is something that happens in the Southern Hemisphere, and we're moving into a La Nina phase, which changes the weather. It's going to affect the Gulf Stream. It's affecting the poles, all that kind of stuff. So it's a kind of... It's induced by mankind in our emissions, but it's something perhaps that sat slightly outside of the modeling. By the way, the 1.5 degrees won't be permanent. It'll happen in the next 5 years, and then it will recede again. But it's alarming that it wasn't meant to have happened for several decades before now.
Well, early, as it were. Yeah. Question from Doug. Says, green gas looks sensible for households already on gas. Why is it not getting the traction it deserves? Have the gas distributors jumped all over it yet? Or are the hydrogen lobby working on them too? Which will end up in tears? That's a very good question.
Yeah, it is a good question. And I was speaking to Ed Miliband last week, and he said to me, what's the biggest obstacle to your green gas plan? And I said, belief. Right, because everybody I talk to, including Ed, says it sounds amazing, but there has to be a but, right? There's something wrong with it. Maybe it can't be scaled, or I don't really know what it is. But it's a situation that we've been in before with renewable energy for a very long time. Wind energy was just too good to be true from the beginning, in fact. You know, it was a clean form of energy. It would never run out. It just had no downsides, except that for some people, you could see it in the landscape and they didn't like it, but it was a minority of people. And green gas is just like that. If you look at the benefits, we can make all of the gas we need from the grass that we have. We can create 160,000 jobs in the rural economy, put $15 billion into that rural economy, create vast new wildlife areas, and have carbon neutral gas over a short life cycle. You know, you've got to say what's not to like, and keep the gas grid and avoid throwing away all of our boilers and stuff like that. So I think it's about belief. Our first project goes live in maybe 4 or 5 weeks' time now, early June anyway, in Reading. It will produce gas and finally go onto the grid. The grid has been holding us up. And I think there's a really important way to address the problem. We'll have a demonstration project to show people that it's real. And then it's a question about scaling and verifying that it can be scaled and that these are the benefits and that kind of stuff. So I'm not unused to this situation. And I think, you know, we're on the right path to solve it.
So there's not a, you know, often when ideas come up, whether it's in feats of engineering or medicine, whatever it happens to be, everything looks good on paper, but the but factor that you just referred to kicks in, and a load of people come along and go, no. You see, this is the reason why it's a problem. You're citing that scale is the thing that scares the pants off people.
Yeah, and I think that basically is it, actually. Yeah, just the idea of how we'll only need 3,000 of them. It will take up a lot of land, but it's to grow grass, a diverse mix of grass that is a great nature habitat. And at the moment, we give 75% of our country to bad nature habitats to grow plants to feed animals. And so it's a way better alternative use. But it is simply about that. And as I said to Ed last week, look, it doesn't even have to be 100% of our gas. Actually, you know, if it even made 50% of our gas, is going to make a major difference. It's a choice that we will have in terms of what we do with our land. But the idea of scoping out what was theoretically possible was just that, to show what was possible. And in theory, we could go all the way and have all of our gas this way.
This would have an effect, one would assume then, Dale, on the eating of animals. Is that, I mean, naturally, that would be something you would desire. But there would certainly be a resistance to that from some people.
Yeah, but you know it's happening anyway. There's been a 30% reduction in red meat consumption in the last 10 years in our country. 30%, it's a big deal. So, you know, people are turning their backs on red meat because of the health issues and the climate issues probably. And so this is just a trend that's taking place. And if you look at the work of the Climate Change Committee, they're forecasting that we need probably another 30% reduction in meat consumption in our country in order to get to net zero. And so the land that we need to make all of our gas this way is not just within the scope of what's possible, it's within the scope of what's desirable and necessary to get to net zero anyway. And there has to be a change of diet bundled into that.
Yeah, well, connected to that, bird flu is back, spreading to humans as well. I know this is not going to surprise you, though, because you've talked about this sort of thing before.
Yeah, because it's a virus, right? And 3/4 of all known zoonotic viruses, which is what the coronavirus was, there are about 40 known in the world, 3/4 of them come from animal farming. So the idea that birds can have this virus and it's not going to jump to humans, well, that's one for the fairies, right? And it's happening. It's jumped to humans. Two people have been tested. You know, already officials are saying, well, maybe they just inhaled the virus and they haven't been affected and that kind of stuff. Maybe so. I think it's just a matter of time before this virus that's killing already millions of wild birds around the planet will jump to humans, could be our next big, you know, virus catastrophe. And it, again, goes to the heart of animal agriculture. It's so unhealthy for us and for the planet, let alone the poor animals themselves. We really need to end it.
Talking of poor animals, here's another headline. Death by pheasant, how the shooting season is overwhelming nature. What's going on?
Yeah, I mean that's such a funny headline, right? You know, it evokes images of pheasants running around with their tweed hats on and f***ing double barrel shotguns, right?
Blowing Tarquin away in the acreage of southern Wiltshire. I like the idea.
But what's actually behind the headline is that the biomass, the physical weight of all of the game birds released in every year for the, you know, the spurious pleasure of shooting, which is considered to be a sport by some people, you know, blasting pheasants, you know, full of lead pellets so they can die in some agony, right? I mean, that's how I see it. The weight of all of those pheasants is bigger than the weight of all of the wild birds living in the UK at the moment, because we've decimated wildlife, including by rearing pheasants. Anyway, here's the story, right? They now weigh more than all the wild birds put together.
Where does this leave the pheasant plucker or the pheasant plucker's son?
Plucked.
Well, he's got a lot of work on his hands because there's plenty of them. So there it is. Kerry says, good to see the energy regulator dishing out some fines this week to energy companies breaking the rules. Could this be the start of getting to grips with things?
The regulator's always done that. I did see the news today. It was two or three companies. E.ON were the big one with the big numbers. OVO, the original bad boys of the energy market, they were named as well. And so was Good Energy, which is a bit of a surprise. And they were a guilty, there were two categories of problems. They were involved in both. And oddly enough, the fine that they paid was equivalent to half of their profit last year, 2 million quid, just over 2 million quid. And whereas the fine that E.ON paid would have been a fraction, you know, a drop in the ocean of what they actually made. But I don't think it was a big deal. These guys had systems that weren't fit for purpose. They basically overcharged customers when it came to the price cap and the energy company guarantee that you know, the government put in place. So they just had bad systems and overcharged a few thousand customers. But a bit of a surprise, really, the level of fines.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have echoed specifically that point. Here's a story that comes out of Surrey. A legal battle in Surrey could stop fossil fuel expansion in the UK. Is this some kind of sort of test case almost, Dale?
This is a really interesting story. Apart from the fact that it's a horse hill and there are so many of them in England, I thought I knew where it was. But this one is around Gatwick. And somebody has a plan to pump 3 million tons of oil out of the ground there, which is being opposed. It's going to court. The protesters are making a case that it doesn't describe in the article, but it has to be about the climate crisis and how we can't allow new drilling for fossil fuels. And especially because the Supreme Court have taken a really unusual step in allowing four other entities to intervene in the legal case in order to make their own representations. And of course, they're all fossil fuel interested companies, including the company behind the proposed new coal mine in Cumbria. So they all want to intervene to prevent the decision going the wrong way, because the belief is if this decision is won by protesters, then it could end coal mines, it could end drilling in the North Sea, it could end sourcing of all new fossil fuels in Britain, which would be incredible.
Absolutely.
Hi, I'm Mike Graham from Talk TV, and I've been asked to tell you about green issues and a new book called Manifesto. It's brilliant, apparently. Do you believe in climate change? I don't. Do you believe we all need to find a greener way of living our lives? No, I don't either. I think it's all a load of guff perpetuated by loony lefties and eco-zealots hell-bent on causing a nuisance. Do you believe we're all killing our beautiful planet? No. Neither do I, but I know a fellow who does. His name's Dale Vince. He's so convinced he's written a whole book about it called Manifesto. The Battle for Green Britain. It's part memoir, part handbook for changing the world and shaking it up, apparently. I won't be buying it, but you can if you want to waste your hard-earned cash. It's $4.99. Pretty cheap, isn't it? You must be wealthy as hell. According to this script, it's available now from fgr.co.uk/shop.
Question here from Moth, who's a lifelong Green Party member. I would have guessed that just from the name, Moth, which is fantastic. While I understand your support, Dale, for a Labour government, I wonder how green they will be. I want to see proportional representation brought in by the Labour government. This would guarantee the Tories would never get into power again.
Yeah.
But wouldn't that be, I mean, I know that can be delicious from some angles, but would that not be as sort of undemocratic as the argument that's being put forward in favour of proportional representation?
What, to want it because it would keep the Tories out? Is that under...
Well, I mean, it's great. It's very seductive. If you're a Green Party voter or a Labour Party voter, you go, yeah, we want to get the Tories out of power forever. But if you want a system that is going to ensure that, is that not kind of as rigged as the system you're trying to get rid of now?
Well, that's one way to look at it.
I mean, I'm just talking about in terms of democracy, basically.
Yeah, no, I understand. It's one way to look at it. I mean, I think if you look at proportional representation, it's what it says on the tin, right? We'll have a government that is in proportion to the views of people in our country. And so we won't have just one Green MP, and the Tories won't get an 80-seat majority with just 40% of the popular vote. So I think it is arguably a better form of democracy, and you see it in other countries of the world, like Germany, for example. They're well-run countries with strong economies, stronger than ours. They're better run than we are. So I don't think either you could say that proportional representation wouldn't give us decisive government, because, you know, there are so many examples around the world where that is not true.
How green are the Labour Party going to be? Because that's a big question. I know, okay, they're going to be greener than the Tories. That's not that hard to do. But what's the wiggle room on this? If they are 10% greener than the Tories, that's not good enough, right?
No, that wouldn't be good enough. I think they're going to be far more green than the Tories. I mean, it's ironic because at times you hear members of the Green Party, I've got a lot of friends in the Green Party, let me just say that, you hear people saying, oh, Labour have stolen our policies. So, you know, it's ironic for them also to be worried that Labour won't go far enough. And my answer to that always is you should be glad that Labour have stolen your policies, because they can form a government. And you know, my talks to people in the Labour Party, I think they're going to be pretty radical on the green agenda. But as you say, compared to the Tories, that's not hard. We'll see them ban new drilling for oil and gas, I'm certain of it. Certainly coal mines as well. I think we'll see the return of onshore wind and some of those basic fundamental things that will help us get more quickly to 100% green electricity on the grid. And they intend to get there by 2030. Even I think that might be a challenge, but I support the intention. So I think we'll get the greenest government probably the world has ever seen. That's my personal view.
Climate change will cut more than half of land available for coffee. Will this make society wake up, is the headline here. I mean, we all need our coffee, don't we? That doesn't harm anybody, a bit of coffee.
I love the headline, though. Wake up and smell the lack of coffee.
Yeah, yeah. I'm worried here.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, this is about climate, right? And the climate that you need to grow coffee. And, you know, we talk usually in terms of the climate crisis of of the environment being difficult for people to live in, you know, causing climate migration and climate refugees and stuff like that. Here we're talking about a super popular crop globally, and there'll be large chunks of existing territory where it simply can't grow. And, you know, it's just another great example, I think, that could help everybody wake up and smell the coffee. You know, that's what I hope.
Here's a final question from Kelly, who says, thank you for reading out my message last week. Are we allowed to do that, Dale? Are we allowed to read two messages from the same person?
That's what I was thinking. But anyway.
That's not proportional representation, no, is it? That's a monopoly. Kelly says, thank you for reading out my message last week. I've asked the MD of the Carbon Literacy Project how many of our MPs are currently trained. The answer, one. How can I put them in touch with you? This was a question about whether we should have, you know, if you really want to get MPs and potential MPs on board, they've got to at least know a little bit about what they're talking about. So when these issues come up, they can dominate and convincingly sell arguments around the environmental agenda.
Yeah. And by the way, I read an article today that said 25% of Tory MPs are retiring at the next election.
Wow.
That's interesting. But
so I feel there should be a sound effect for that.
It's just dramatic, right?
Can we just try that? Let's try it again. 25% of Tory MPs are retiring at the next election. There you go.
That worked. All right, that worked. But the answer to how to get in touch with me is like email Ecotricity and ask for it to be passed to me. That'd be the best way to do it.
And in fact, tying in with a lack of Tories, there was a really weird conference took place this week, which was kind of like a... it was a sort of National Conservative Association. It wasn't the Conservative Party. It was an American organization that set it up. And a few members of the Conservative Party, like Michael Gove and Jacob Rees-Mogg, who got hounded by Just Stop Oil on stage, or Extinction Rebellion, one of the two. So I don't know what this was all about, but it was kind of like extreme conservatism.
Yeah, from the US, actually. The people that organized it are a US organization that, you know, they're kind of a part of that extreme right wing that they have over there and have allegedly had a lot of influence on Trump, or unless it's the other way around, who knows? But they came over here peddling their wares, and you know, they found a handful of extremists in the Tory party to go and talk to them, including two cabinet ministers. And you know, the agenda was incredible. You know, they're talking about economic Marxist, which is some kind of anti-Semitic trope, and the kind of stuff that was being said here. This is a quote from like an SNP MP. One of the things they were saying was the Holocaust was dismissed as Nazis messing things up, right? Only straight couples can safely bring up children. Pagans and narcissists are harming Western civilization, and woke teachers are ruining children's education. I mean, an incredible list of grievances and conspiracy theories coming out of that. And just great entertainment, right?
It was incredible entertainment. But it was the poshest hijacking of Jacob Rees-Mogg when a chap from, I think, Just Stop Oil walked on stage with a very nice man. And he said, hello, nice to meet you. And Mogg, nice to meet you too. And then he proceeded to take the microphone and start talking about fascism before he was taken off. But it was arguably the most peaceful demo I've ever seen.
But the whole idea of this... you know, this right-wing circus coming to London just entertained me.
Yeah, maybe they'll invite you next year, Dale, as a kind of counterbalance to their views.
One of the left-wing loonies that they made so much fuss about, right? One of those people that are trying to undermine global Western democracy or whatever.
That's the secret plan all along, isn't it? So,
hang on, I just get my white cat and
get in that chopper, Dale. That's it. It awaits on the roof. We'll speak next week, Dale.
Yeah, looking forward to it. See you then.
Have a good one. That's it for this episode. Don't forget, of course, you can follow this podcast from your podcast provider so that you get each new episode automatically. Leave a review there too. Really important bit, don't forget to follow Dale on social media, twitter.com/DaleVince, facebook.com/DaleVince, and on Insta too.
Zero Carbon.
East on.